because there's been quite a good deal going on in the news. I went through the paper, yesterday's paper, and started to actually cut out pieces that were relevant. And I think of the actual news section, probably good almost half the paper was starting to be cut out in one way or another, because it was particularly relevant. I think one of the big areas of news is the hurricane that is currently hitting Texas, and certainly that hurricane by itself would be a major event. But the fact that it comes so soon after the other hurricane that went into New Orleans, it is, I'll read certain articles here, that it is quite an amazing event. It is something that hasn't really happened in that way quite before, and it certainly does tell us a great deal. Commenting on the New Orleans, the hurricane that actually occurred there and all the devastation that was caused, there was something here, an article actually I received from the internet, and it says, Katrina casualties include the gay Southern decadence, and various people are blaming this wicked party for the horrible hurricane. And he goes on, it says, in addition to the flooded streets, a lack of fresh water and no electricity, New Orleans council member Jackie Clarkson told the Associated Press on Wednesday that the French Quarter had been attacked and looting is out of control. But it says, in light of recent events, the city's 34th annual Southern Decadence Festival was cancelled on August the 31st, according to one of the events organised called Johnny Kisholm, I think it is. Kisholm owns Oz, which is New Orleans' largest gay dance bar, which is located on the Bourbon Street in the French Quarter. So this particular Southern Decadence party, which was about to take place, was not able to. And and also everything else that was taking place after the hurricane, in the aftermath, and not just the looting, but the rape and everything else that was taking place. I also got an article here from today's paper. It was an analysis of a newscaster over here called Mark Austin. Now, Mark Austin is quite well known over here for ITV News at 10:30, and he was saying here, he says, why is giving up after 20 years covering the major disasters? He's actually moving into the newsroom itself. It says, in this article, it says, this week it was disclosed that Tony Blair had complained to Rupert Murdoch, that's the paper owner, about the BBC's anti-US bias and its gloating coverage of the New Orleans disaster. Potentially dangerous ground, perhaps for a television newscaster, but Austin weighs into the argument before he's even made the coffee. It was shocking, really appalling, what I saw in New Orleans. Now, he was the News at 10's or the ITV News presenter in that area. It says, as we drove in on Wednesday, all the troops were fleeing in the other direction. We got stopped at a roadblock, and the guy said, you're nuts if you go in there. Hide yourself and take yourself a gun, or hide your stuff and take yourself a gun. When the ITV news crew arrived at the convention centre, their car was surrounded by 40,000 people screaming for food and drink. They were desperate, and I jumped out, did my piece, and we left pretty fast. The streets were empty, and there was just this marauding gang. Society had imploded, and I expected that in Iraq, but not in the United States. So this is a thing that he can see. And what he then goes on, he says, he cannot help comparing Hurricane Katrina to the Asian tsunami, which he also covered. That was a total devastation and destruction. In Banda Aysa, all the buildings had been flattened, only the mosques remained. Yet people behaved better. There were thousands of bodies on the streets, and yet there was just a tiny bit of looting. The Indonesian government immediately opened up the area after the disaster. The reaction to the tsunami in these worst-off countries were so much better than in America that it made me angry. So he was seeing a contrast between what was actually taking place in New Orleans and what was taking place in the tsunami, because he was actually the man on the spot and witnessing that. Now, we're now looking at this Hurricane Rita that's coming in, and it says here, 2 million flee the new threat to America's battered coastline. And it says, Hurricane Katrina, which struck New Orleans 3 weeks ago, it says, the coincidence of two storms of this size within a single hurricane season is extremely rare. As I say, it is extremely rare. What we're looking at is something which is quite unusual. and you think, well, is that unusual event? Is it just something that we are looking at as the global warming takes place? Or is it more than that? It's also, there's an article here immediately under it, to a wake-up call for the US climate loonies. There was people that are saying, look, the climate change, it's just a, it's not really anything to do with the greenhouse gases. It says the violence of Hurricane Rita and Katrina should at least awake the Bush administration to the danger of climate change, one of Britain's most senior scientists said yesterday. So that was another article in there. But here it says that also in the path of the storm were the densely packed, now this is talking about Rita now, which is now hitting, the densely packed oil refineries of America's biggest crude producing region in southeastern Texas. Experts warned that significant damage would send petrol prices through the roof and could trigger a major energy crisis, and petrol stocks were already at a very low level. Now, it looks as if it isn't actually going to hit the heart and core of that area, but it is, in fact, hitting the Beaumont-Port Arthur area. I believe that that is where it actually seems to be centered on. And another article that was just sent to me this morning, and it says, the Beaumont-Port Arthur Metropolitan Statistical Area, the MSA, is approximately 385,000 residents and is located in the southeastern Texan Gulf Coast. The entire Beaumont area was changed on January 10, 1901, when the Lucas Well at Spindletop blew in from a depth of 1,020 feet with oil gushing 200 feet into the air. Now that's the reason why there are people building in these areas. Many MSA inhabitants refer to the area bordered by Beaumont, Orange and Port Arthur as the Golden Triangle. The area employment relies heavily on petroleum-based industries, timber production and shipping through the area ports. The port of Beaumont is the fifth busiest port in the United States in terms of annual tonnage. And that's where the hurricane is heading for right now. More than 15 million people live within a 300-mile radius of this Beaumont-Port Arthur area. Now, the repercussions are not even just happening within America itself. The repercussions also go across to Europe as well. Here's an article from the EU Observer, again this last week. It says, EU oil reserves are at risk as Hurricane Rita approaches. And it says, EU Observer, Brussels, it says, EU oil aid to the US in the wake of Hurricane Katrina could drain some member state stock below the agreed minimums, Brussels warned, as Hurricane Rita then prepares to smash into Texas this weekend. Some will almost certainly go below that figure, the European Commission's Energy Department head, Helmut Schmidt von Sydow, warned on Thursday. That's the 22nd of September, referring to a 1968 agreement under which the EU-15 promised not to let oil reserves fall below 90 days' worth of consumption. So the actual reserves that we're holding here within the EU, because of being sent across to America, because of the hurricane, these are actually dropping, and these have dropped, and they're dropping below the agreed minimum. Now, all you need, therefore, is yet another outrage, and you know it could be a bombing in the in say Saudi Arabia in the oil refinery, which they've been worried about for some considerable time, or some other disaster, and there would be a major serious problem. Turn over to Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28. The point is that if you have this southern decadence and all the other things that are going on within the Western world and the Western nations, there are automatic penalties. It says in verse 15 of Deuteronomy 28, it says, but if it shall come to pass that if you will not listen to the voice of the Eternal your God, and one thing that's noticeably absent in all the news coverage that we have over here is any mention of God. There's absolutely nothing over here. It just seems as if, you know, God doesn't even come into it. If you won't listen and to all his commandments, notice what it is that they're listening to, his commandments, his statutes, which I command you this day, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. And the one thing that is thrown out of the window by the antinomian philosophy of the Protestant world are the commandments of God to a large degree. Cursed shall you be in the city, cursed you will be in the field, cursed will you be your basket and your store, the fruit of your body, the fruit of the land, the increase of your kine and the flocks of the sheep. Cursed will you be when you come in, and cursed you will be when you go out. The Eternal will send upon you cursing, vexation, and rebuke in all that you set your hand to do until you are destroyed. And the thing that the entire society that we have today, the thing that it rests on, is oil. You hit oil and you hit everything. The whole fabric of society is being hit at the moment. And it appears that something happens which will cause the European nations to go down into the Middle East eventually. And the most likely thing that will happen is a restriction on the oil supply. Until you are destroyed and until you perish quickly because of the wickedness of your doings whereby you have forsaken me. Now nobody puts the link between the two, but the link is there. You know, we don't live in a product of an evolutionary process which is blind. We live as a product of a creation, and that creation is by a creator God, that not only his word upholds the reality that we live in, it upholds the morality that we are supposed to live in as well. And it is these two things that go hand in glove, and people do not recognize this at all. It says, the Eternal will make the pestilence cleave to you until he has consumed you from off the land in which you go to possess. So we are looking at this at this present time. We're looking at the one area that really is crucial to our present civilization. At the same time as this is going on, there's another batch of events that are taking place, and that is over in Iraq. On the papers over this past week, there's a paper here that I've got where there's a man, a British soldier, leaving his armoured personnel carrier, and he's on fire. He's obviously on fire, and there's a protester running away underneath, and he is trying to get out of the fireball that is there. And I'm not sure how much has been reported in other countries, but it has been in the news quite significantly over here that the SAS, who were stopped by certain individuals, the local police in Basra, and they shot one person dead who was not a policeman. You wonder what that person was doing with the police, and injured one of the policemen. Now, the reason for doing that is that it says British forces are powerless as Basra descends into anarchy. It says they wear police uniforms, they drive official vehicles, but the main priority of the rival militia that they have usurped the Basra's police force is not to maintain law and order. Instead, they have turned Iraq's second city into a patchwork of rival fiefdoms where competing militias run corruption scams and murder their rivals, dumping the bodies into a rubbish tip known as the Lot on the outskirts of the city. This was the sense of inevitability about the chaotic scenes in Basra on Monday. So what we saw there was a result of something. And the result was that here are these rival gangs, rival militia, and many of them supporting various ayatollahs. And they are undermining, they're actually in the police force. I read an article, a quotation from one of the leaders of the police force down there, who said that he can only really trust 25% of his force. The other 75% were not to be trusted because they are part of the militia. And they have been gone into the police force because that obviously, it pays them to do that. And it also allows them to have the authority and to spread the militia's teachings within an official capacity. And this is what the SAS was in there to try and sort out. And yet, it just blew up in our face. It says, a Shia militia accused of taking the two SAS soldiers hostage in Basra this week sought to stoke growing anti-British sentiment in southern Iraq yesterday by accusing London of masterminding terrorist attacks in the country. And what they're claiming is that the British are in there at the behest of Mossad. In other words, the Israeli secret place. This is the what is being spread throughout everyone in that, say, everyone. The supporters of particularly the Shia cleric Mokhtar Sadr in Basra, where the army previously were on good terms with the residents, but the cleric is stirring up the individuals against the British at that particular time. It says, as Iran paraded, another article as well, at the same time, in Iran, the European nations backed down over the Iran's potential nuclear capabilities. It says, as Iran paraded ballistic missiles draped with defiant slogans such as, we will crush America under our feet, and Israel must be wiped off the face of the earth, the so-called EU3 submitted a new resolution at the International Atomic Energy Agency, which delays action to an unspecified date. In other words, they're stopping doing that, and yet at the same time, Iran is also feeding the militia in Basra. So the whole area is becoming more and more unstable, and it is this instability. You've got the instability in the oil markets, you've got the instability here within this area also. Now, if we turn over to Hosea, in Hosea chapter 7, it says here in verse 8, it says, Ephraim, he has mixed himself among the peoples. Ephraim is a cake unturned. In other words, he's half-baked, he's useless. Strangers have devoured his strength, and he doesn't even realize it. This multiculturalism is devouring the strength here. And over in places like Iraq, it's the actual the imposition of a democracy in that area, where there are factions literally fighting between each other into almost a civil war, is devouring his strength there, and he doesn't know it. Yes, grey hairs are here and there upon him, and yet he just simply doesn't know it, and the pride of Israel testifies to his face. Another article here from September the 5th, it says, Britain could soon be Europe's sick man again. It says, barely noticed, Germany has overtaken America to become the world's biggest single exporter, shipping the hardware that powers the rising economies of Asia and Eastern Europe. Now, so as an exporter, which obviously is the kind of the beginning of the economic might that is necessary, if you've got your exports, if you're a leading exporter, that's your economic might on which the rest of the infrastructure can then be built. And Germany has actually overtaken America in this area. It is number one. It says, in Asia and Europe, its trade surplus is now greater than that of China, Japan and India combined. That is Germany today. And these things are not generally known and not generally realized. It's reaching a staggering 16.8 billion euros in June alone. The profits made by the German companies are running at over 33% of the national income, the highest in 40 years. Now, I want you to keep in mind this article, because it again goes on and talks about Britain. It says, the single currency which so punished Germany at the first will soon work to its advantage with ominous effects. Its firms are already sweeping southern Europe and conquering the Goths. A senior economist at the European Commission told me that the German success would ultimately break the euro itself, starting with the ejection of Italy, but France may not be spared either. And he goes into the area saying that Britain could well be Europe's sick man again, rather than Europe's driving force. Now, we see that, and we see also other articles where we see Britain being, or the British, the Ephraimites, coming under attack. Mugabe strikes his final blow against white farmers. After years of resisting President Robert Mugabe's violent campaign to rid Zimbabwe of white farmers, and it goes into the purge that's taking place, that continues to escalate at that particular time. But what I want you to go into is, here is Germany with a huge, huge industrial base. At the same time, we have the power in the world, which is America, under enormous onslaught from things like hurricanes and undoubtedly other things as well. And you're also looking at the hammering that both Britain and America are getting over in Iraq. And at the same time, in Germany today, we have chaos. We have absolute chaos because of the election. Now, one thing that the Germans will not tolerate is a chaotic time. In other words, where they do not like being insecure It's like the Germanic mind. If somebody says the Germanic mind, it is a military precise mind. And this military precise mind does not like what it sees within Germany today as a democratic nation. So the election chaos in Germany as the rivals finish neck and neck. Germany was thrown into turmoil last night after Chancellor Gerhard Schröder and the challenger Angela Merkel both claimed a mandate to govern the country. In one of the bitterest election contests since the war, Mrs. Merkel's Christian Democrats scored a narrow victory, according to exit polls, ending the seven-year Social Democrat Green coalition led by Mr. Schröder. So we have this chaos that is over there. It says here, it says, German rivals struggle for power. Gerhard Schröder and Angela Merkel were locked in a vicious struggle for political supremacy last night, as both insisted they were Germany's rightful leader after Sunday's knife-edge election. Whoever is going to win in there, whoever is actually going to go ahead and govern, they will have a very weak power base. And yet here is this enormous economic power with political instability. And this is a major, major problem. I was wrong to take the mickey out of Merkel. That's Gerhard Schröder, the German Chancellor, admitted yesterday that he had unfairly mocked his rival, and so on. But there was a comment that I read, and this comment has a great deal to say, because here we have, as I say, this economic base, which is pushing forward, which has overtaken America. We have this political instability that is there, and it says, by the time the Germans decide, it'll be too late. This is the comment from the Telegraph in September the 20th. That's last Tuesday. It says, Germany is dying demographically and economically. Pick any of the usual indicators of a healthy, advanced industrial democracy. Unemployment, the highest for 70 years. So here it is, economically, as far as the actual influence on the world, the way in which it's able to sell its goods, it's right at its pinnacle. But here it says, unemployment is the highest for 70 years, house prices are down, new car registrations, nearly 15% lower than 99, general nuttiness, a third of Germans under 30 think the United States government were responsible for the terrorist attacks of September the 11th. A third of Germans in that age bracket believe that the United States was, you know, it's not a case of not knowing, that is what they believe. While the unemployment, real estate and car sales may be reversible, the last number suggested that the German electorate isn't necessarily the group you'd want to pitch a rational argument to. Now, when you put that into the equation, you suddenly start to see a different scenario. You start to see a different type of Germany. As it goes on, it explains here, it says, according to recent polls, 70% of Germans want to no further cuts in the welfare state and prefer increasing taxation on the very rich. In April, only 45% of Germans agreed that competition is good for economic growth and unemployment. This is why Mrs. Merkel probably didn't get in, because she said, look, she's going to scrap all the tax laws and replace it with a standard 25% tax. And what Gerhard Schröder then did is he attacked that specific platform. And he showed that if that was the case, various little groups within Germany wouldn't get their benefits, wouldn't become on top. They'd actually suffer as a result. He didn't go ahead and show the enormous advantage that something like that would have on the German economic engine, which would then push it really forward in the world as an economic power. But it says here, in April, only 45% of Germans agreed that competition was good for economic growth and employment. In other words, things aren't going to have to get a lot worse before German voters will seriously consider radical change. And the question then is whether the Christian Democrats will be the radical change they consider. As Sunday's result in East Germany indicates, it's as likely or not more to be the ex-communist or the neo-Nazis or some other opportunist fringe party. The longer European countries postpone the painful reforms, which is what Mrs. Merkel was trying to do, the more painful they're going to be. And those more painful they're going to be, if you've got this electoral group, which really, as he says here, he says that, German electorate. The German electorate isn't necessarily the group that you want to pitch a rational argument to. That is not what is happening. You're looking at something which is becoming ripe for something like a Hitler. In other words, here is this situation where you've got chaos within the country, and yet you've got this prosperity and this driving economic force, and it is becoming ripe. And you also have America and Britain being bogged down in so many other areas. Another area that is occurring as well, Malta fears it will sink under the growing tide of migrants from Africa. This is something which is being faced within Europe generally. It says the holy island of Malta is in the grip of accidental tragedy. It is directly in the path of a growing and potentially vast flow of asylum seekers from sub-Saharan Africa into southern Europe. Its proximity to Libya, by it's only 180 miles to the south, threatens the identity and culture of the islanders. Thousands of refugees have made it into the crossing in recent months. And it goes on about the refugee boats that they've actually confiscated and the number of refugees there. I mean, it gives a picture of all the various boats. They're all with numbers on them of these refugees that have come in. At the same time as this is going on, at the same time as you have this political chaos, you also have something else happening as well on the religious front. Turn over to Revelation 19. Revelation 19. And as we are watching the world scene, as we're watching what is actually taking place on the world scene, we need to be aware of this particular verse. Revelation 19, verse 20, it says here, "And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him." So this leader within Europe, which is apparently, as far as we can tell, is going to be an Assyrian, a German presumably, but an Assyrian. Wherever he's going to come from, we don't know, but he's going to be Assyrian. "That wrought miracles before him." So in addition to that one, there's going to be a false prophet, a false religious leader, "with which he deceived those that had received the mark of the beast and those that worshipped his image." These both were taken and cast into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. So we're seeing a religious leader that is going to have to rise. So we're seeing the chaos within Europe. And at the same time, we see headlines such as this one from yesterday's paper: "The Pope is to exclude gay priests." So on the one hand, you've got New Orleans with this gay decadence celebration having to be postponed, and all of these people then being spread out throughout the United States. And it says the Roman Catholic Church is preparing to bar homosexuals from becoming priests, even if they are celibate, in what could be proved to be a defining act of Benedict's papacy. An instruction spelling out the policy has been drafted by the Congregation for Catholic Education and Seminaries, and Vatican officials say that it's expected to be published within weeks, and it goes into this particular communication. And he basically says, look, it is not consistent with what a priest is supposed to do, and therefore there is a firmness there. And yet at the same time, I heard on the news this morning an interview with two people. One was with an evangelical, and one was with a bishop in the Church of England. And this particular bishop had just ordained an individual who was a woman into the priesthood, but she wasn't always a woman. She was actually a man. And he, she, it, whatever you want to call it, who had various surgery, is now a priest within the Church of England. So you've got this kind of nonsense on one side, and on the other side you have a firmness. You have this chaos that's happening within Europe, and this Germanic concept, the militaristic Germanic mind that does not like that. And yet here is an individual that's going to arise, plus a false prophet with him, and they're going to sway the entirety of Europe and take the entirety of Europe with them. At the same time, the Vatican is being accused of shielding war criminals. It says one of the most wanted indicted war criminals is being shielded by the Roman Catholic Church. And the Vatican hierarchy, the United Nations chief prosecutor for former Yugoslavia, said yesterday, Carla De Ponte said that she believed that General Ante Gotovina was being sheltered in a Franciscan monastery in the native Croatia. So we see this. And this Croatia was a supporter of Hitler. They were you know, they were very much, and they're very, very Catholic, very Catholic. So you see this right-wing leaning. At the same time, within the West, you've got this Bible for slow readers. It says, in the beginning of the Word, but the Word went on a bit, so a new version of the Bible has been produced for readers with the short attention spans. So, in other words, you can read the Bible in 100 minutes, apparently. And we see other things going on as well. There is an article here. Judge Dredd powers for the police are being urged. So at the same time as you have all this chaos and confusion politically, at the same time as you have these movements that are occurring, you have powers being implemented within Europe. And one of these powers, it says, Britain's top police officer, he was accused last night of paving the way for a Judge Dredd law. Now, Judge Dredd was the one who sent the convicts, as I understand it, across to Australia. Sorry, you Australians. But he sent the convicts across to Australia, and he did it, it was summary justice. He just make up his mind, right, we'll send you, and basically never listen to the evidence whatsoever. By proposing that officers should be allowed to bypass the courts and confiscate driving licenses, seize vehicles and issue antisocial behaviour orders on the spot. And the Metropolitan Police Commission, Sir Ian Blair, said the modernisation of the force should be carried forward by introducing an escalation of powers for the dispensing of instant justice. And so on it goes. But we see this... it's something which is happening continually, that this power base is being built by the legislation. And what we need to be watching all this time is that this power base is being built at the same time as there is chaos within the political structure, at the same time as you see America being weakened, and particularly the oil industry being weakened, which is the lifeblood of the Western civilization. You see the problem down in the Middle East, and these are birth pains. These are birth pains, and we need to keep a very close eye on what is going on, and we need to realize that they are birth pains, and we are watching the demise of the Western way of life, and what will replace it will be horrendous. And it will come from these two individuals who will give the stability that is necessary on the world scene. We will see this confusion escalate, but we will also see these two individuals and the rest of Europe coming behind these two individuals to produce a superpower overnight, the like of which the world has never seen, and in a chaotic time, the like of which the world has never seen, because it is defined as the Great Tribulation, and it is the time of Jacob's trouble. So don't be worried about it. It has to come. But nevertheless, we certainly are living in interesting times.